Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Give me a little Brian in Palo Alto. Brian, you're smarter than us. What do you got on 95.7 The Game?
Yeah, first off, on the last caller on culture, is that culture was established by Trent Baalke, who brought those players in. And the 49ers' issues with Alden Smith, with Bruce Miller, with Ahmad Brooks, all those things extended far after Harbaugh leaving, right? So I don't think there's any dispute, in my opinion. That's entirely on Baalke. Second is I would agree with the last caller. I haven't seen any capacity for bold strokes from this front office, and that is on Kyle Shanahan, who does own final say on personnel. They don't have a number one receiver. They have no edge rushers. They have one linebacker. They have suspect safeties. They have one corner. And, you know, they're going to need to – they got $70 million in cap space. And the only rumor I'm hearing is they're going to extend Buckner. So that's, you know.
Let me ask you this, though, Brian. Is it too much for me to ask as a 49er fan? I see the Rams stink to high heaven, and then all of a sudden – They bring in an offensive-minded head coach to work with a young quarterback. They spend some money in the right places, get them some weapons, and the Rams instantly became a team that you had to reckon with. The Chicago Bears were one of the worst teams in the NFL for a long time. They bring in an offensive-minded head coach. They get their quarterback. They spend money on weapons. They went from a 5-win team to a playoff team, and they should have gone further if they had a better kicker. Can't I ask that of the 49ers? I'm sick and tired of the build through the draft. Let's wait five more years.
You can't build through the draft if you can't draft right. Right. So
that's fair. That's,
if you can't nail those picks in the draft, I mean, nail a significant number of them, then building through the draft is a failed strategy. So this is the year. They don't get a pass because, yes, they lost Garoppolo for a year. They need to make it happen.
Yep.
And, you know, I want to see that there's a sense of urgency. They understand that they need to significantly improve this team this year, or these guys ought to be in trouble after this offseason.
I totally agree. Brian, thank you very much. Very, very educated call. This is Stephen and Vallejo. A little patience. Pessimism comes after year three on a 6-year contract. I'm sorry. Quit thinking about the NFL like it's Major League Baseball. This isn't the Astros and the Cubs tearing it down for 5 years,
right,
getting a bunch of picks, and you get to be good. No one has been able to do that yet in the National Football League. The Browns are attempting to be that. Why is it that we're giving the 49ers a pass? This is ridiculous to me.
Because of the Garoppolo and McKinnon injuries. That simple.
But we went over it. They were a 3-win team without him. At best, they're a 6-win team.
Right, but that's a necessary step. If you want to go from laughingstock, you have to aspire to mediocrity. 6-10 is mediocrity. And then you get the next year to 500 or possibly a little bit better, and then you're ready. If all goes well, by year 4, you should be challenging for a playoff spot.
Give me Rich in Oakland. Rich, you're next on 95.7 The Game. What do you got?
Hey, what's up? I just wanted to say how AB, basically, we got him for the cheap for a third rounder and a fifth rounder. That's basically, you know, people are still going to hate on the Raiders, on Mayock, on Gruden, regardless. He's the number one receiver in the league. Basically, we trade Cooper. We get a first back for Cooper, and Cooper is nowhere near Antonio Brown's talent level. So basically, we got Brown for a third and a fifth. We just traded Kelechi Osemele, which we were going to cut regardless. This year, we were going to cut him. We got a fifth back for him. And then, you know, basically, I just like the way we're trending up. We're making a lot of moves. Mayock isn't messing around, and neither is Gruden. You know, they're building something special, and this isn't a rebuild. We could go from 1 year to the next year and actually make it into a wild card or a playoff berth. Who knows? And all I know, though, that regardless what the Raiders do, regardless of how good the moves that they make, they will always hate on us. John Middlecoff, especially. I don't know why this guy
who
just loves to hate on the Raiders.
Him.
John Middlecoff.
Who?
I got you.
I'm playing with you.
Thanks, Rich. We appreciate it.
Thanks for the call, Rich.
He's a talented guy. I'm a big John fan. He's a good man. I will say that there is a faction of the media that will hate the Raiders no matter what. They just are. And I think that they won't like them because...
That saddens me.
Listen, you want to get left behind the curtain? You want to come to the land of Oz? When it comes to sports, there's bias all over the place. All right? The way people see players in games. Exactly. Yeah. But they come off as, you know, we're in the media. We would never have a bias. That's a load of crap.
Right. I agree.
There's loads of bias all over the place.
I would openly admit to it.
Exactly.
I got an opportunity to savage Mark Redman, who I didn't like, and I took it.
There you go.
And I had Esteban Loaiz is going to jail. I can't tell you how happy that makes me. He's a bad guy.
There you go.
A bad dude.
Exactly. So there is bias in all this stuff. And I think that there are some people who have a double bias because they didn't like John Gruden getting his 10 years, $100 million and coming out of the booth and going back to coach.
See, that's what I have the biggest problem with, Coz, and I'm interested to hear how you feel about it. Anybody who uses money as a reason for not liking somebody, you need to get that out of your heads because nobody is overpaid in pro sports. Nobody. You
or
might
everybody.
Think they are.
Or everybody.
Or everybody. But, I mean, let's face it. None of us can fathom the dollar amounts that we're throwing out there. And if the owner's giving it to the player, then the owner's making it tenfold. So don't hate someone over money.
You're hitting the owner.
That's the only time I'll go down a fan's road is when money is part of their reason for liking and not liking someone.
Chiefs have released former All-Pro Justin Houston. They tried to trade him, couldn't come up with a trade, so they've released him.
So the Raiders agreed to trade Osemele to the Jets. Teams will swap late-round picks and deal for two-time Pro Bowl guard. So let me get this right. The Raiders sent Kelechi Osemele and a sixth-rounder?
And a sixth, yes.
To the Jets for a fifth-rounder?
Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Now,
Mike Save $10 million on the cap, I'm told.
And there you go. And that's part of the deal. They have a little bit more money to spend. They've got draft capital and money. They are dangerous. And I'm telling you, they're going to kick the 49ers right in the crotch this coming season. They are going to be the team that's interesting. They are going to be the team on Monday where if you're a sports writer, who's someone who watches the game and then writes about it in a thing called a newspaper that no one of us ever gets anymore, they're going to go to the Monday press conference in Oakland.
Dude, I pump 8 quarters into this rusted yellow box every Saturday to get a paper.
I'm glad you do, and I yearn for those days, but those days are done, right? We no longer need thought leaders telling me what they think about what happened in the game. It's just not the way it is anymore.
Because you've got a million supposed thought leaders on Twitter alone.
Boom. That's what you got. And the end result is the Raiders are going to be, I fear the Raiders are going to be the place that the media will start to go to on Monday. Not because it's the last year of the Raiders in the Bay Area, because they're significant, because they're good. And Monday on the peninsula, mm-hmm. it's going to be kind of quiet. Who's going to have more Sunday or Monday night games, the 49ers or the Raiders?
No clue. I just know that it depends on what your definition of interesting is, right? I think both teams, even if I wasn't working in the Bay Area, and I was, let's say I'm doing a sports talk radio show in Nebraska. The 49ers and the Raiders are two of the teams that I'm intrigued heading into 2019. Just because of where they're at in their organizational history and what they've done lately. 5-10-0, if he's accurate, great point. If the Raider fans haven't heard about this, they want to hear this. It's $90 million guaranteed versus $30 million when you're looking at Brown instead of Cooper. And then you get picks to help the defense. Raider Realist in 5-10 says it's looking more logical now than ever.
With that, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 KGMZ San Francisco, or radio.com sports
station. We're already halfway through our shift, Jim.
Flew by. I just got here.
Right.
Feels like I just got here.
Doesn't that mean it's a good show?
Yes, for you and I it is.
So far, so
Let me
good.
Just say, you made an interesting point right there, though, through the text line, that they got a better player for less money.
That's guaranteed, yeah.
For a shorter commitment.
And picks.
They're in a better position.
So, Mike Mayock is a real general manager? Is that what I'm hearing?
Well,
we heard.
I think they work in tandem. I'm not going to say.
Here's what's interesting.
Look at that bubble butt. Look at the body.
Shanahan and Lynch, Gruden, Mayock. It sounds like the balance of power is similar, and it's not the norm in the NFL. The coach makes more money and probably has a little bit more say, but clearly Gruden didn't think that he was going to be able to work very well with Reggie, and so far so good with Mayock. I mean, I don't know who to give credit to. Do we give credit to Gruden, who we know that's where the buck truly stops, or Mayock? Because since Mayock joined the fold, they've been making some decent moves.
Well, I think, and this outside looking in, Gruden now has his staff there. He's got his guys.
His guys, yeah.
And Mike Mayock is the final, the piece de resistance. They're all working in tandem.
Is that different than Shanahan and Lynch?
No, I think it is. I think they're the exact same situation.
Okay, that's Shanahan, what it feels like.
Yeah, Shanahan and Lynch, I think, work side by side.
Yes.
Is it the story about who's the running back, Williams from Utah? Joe Williams.
Yes.
Where they were, nope.
He was off the board for Shanahan.
Off the board for Shanahan.
Lynch talked him into putting him back on.
And then, but Shanahan made the call, right? Is that the story? That's the story I heard.
Shanahan called called the Utah coach to find out what was up.
And Shanahan, in the end, said, I can make this guy somebody.
Right.
And he didn't.
But he was prodded by Lynch to give this guy another look.
Here's a better version of our Carr versus Garoppolo question. You get a chance to run a franchise. You get to give the keys to one of these two groups, Shanahan Lynch, Gruden Mayock. Who gets the keys to the kingdom?
Oof.
Building. Now, 2 years ago, you might have said Shanahan and Lynch right off the bat, but now you've got a 2.5 year body of work, 2 year body of work of what they can do.
If Shanahan's as powerful as I think he is, then my first pick in that draft is Shanahan, and then I have Shanahan trade Lynch for Mayock.
Wow, that's something right there.
Shanahan Mayock, the perfect Bay Area football combo.
How about this? If I use that as the argument, how am I not taking a guy who's won a Super Bowl and one of the best evaluators of talent that we think we see because we saw him on TV doing the same thing in Mayock and Gruden? How do I not say that's clearly the better?
They're more proven, yeah.
Which means if I'm going to build something, or do you make the argument, well, Gruden actually had his built by someone else and he took them to a Super Bowl.
Yes.
And when he had a chance to build in Tampa Bay, it didn't go very well. And Mayock has only been a TV guy.
And if those people are making that case, then they're probably the same people that are without a doubt picking Shanahan and Lynch, right? Because they're clearly not sold on Gruden and Mayock. But what have Shanahan and Lynch accomplished? Look, Shanahan was the head of a very, very good offense
Garoppolo.
In Atlanta, clearly.
Yeah, he absolutely was. There's no getting around
it. He gagged in the Super Bowl. A lot of people can say they gagged against the Patriots in a Super Bowl.
Right. That's a long list.
But still, I mean, as a head coach, Shanahan hasn't gotten anything done. Lynch is a first-time GM who has probably missed more than he's hit. So you put my feet to the fire, yeah, I'm taking Gruden and Mayock.
That's interesting. If I'm a 49er fan, would I rather have those two guys in silver and black running my operation? That's an interesting one. N2, Dublin. Sometimes I take the train from Dublin. I'm Bart guy. Big Bart guy.
Bart guy.
Big Bart guy.
What's up, N2? How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Happy Sunday. First off, big fan.
Thank you.
Because if the Warriors play-by-play ever opens up television, you're my guy.
Oh, you're very
kind. I thanked him, and he was complimenting you.
I know, exactly. Thank you. Thank you, N2. He knows where to go. Thank you, N2. It's very kind of you to say.
Herb's compliment for you, too. Your chronicles of my favorite pitching trio of all time is bar none. So,
thank you, man. I appreciate that.
You're in good graces there. Hey, a couple comments. One, there's going to be people that do hate on this Antonio Brown thing, but the reality of it is, when I look at this, I'm a Raider fan. I don't care who the general manager has been. If you look at the past 5 years, other than Mack or Carr, who the Raiders drafted with their first and second round picks, let alone their third and fifth?
Was Carl Joseph a first or second? Carl Joseph was a first rounder. He's entering the last year of his rookie contract, right?
Yeah, yeah. And he has, listen, I like Joseph. He hasn't been, you know, everything that he's been advertised. And maybe there's still time for him. But my point is you got to do something if you're Oakland. And it's a no-brainer. So you roll with it and you go. P.S., everybody who's worried about Antonio Brown being a cancer in the locker room and ruining culture, if I'm Pittsburgh and I'm making the patriarch of my franchise, Ben Roethlisberger, I mean, check his rap sheet, dude. The guy is no saint. He's not somebody that I'm placing as the face of my franchise or the mecca of my culture. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous.
That's
besides
a good point.
Football, I did, sorry, go ahead.
That's a good point, although Roethlisberger on the field is one tough mother.
Agreed. Hell of a quarterback.
Yeah.
Agreed. Moving off this for 1 minute, and this one's directed probably more at you, Herbs, but, you know, just jumping into A's baseball for a second.
Yep.
Got to see Franklin Barreto with the club. Simeon needs to be traded. Move Profar to short. Barreto at second. Got to break camp with Lizardo. I'm out.
I like it.
All right.
Thanks,
N2. I'm definitely with you on breaking camp with Lizardo. That guy's been awesome in Cactus League. Now, in terms of...
Are you a Barreto guy? Have you seen enough from Barreto to say he's an everyday?
I think he's an everyday guy. I don't think we've seen the best
at second base,
of Barreto.
Right? Barreto's at second base. He can't play short.
He's a second baseman.
He's a triple-A shortstop, but he's a major league second baseman.
Like, I'm still trying to figure out if Franklin Barreto is the, and you never want to be labeled as the quadruple-A guy. Right?
Man. The A's have had a number of quadruple-A guys. Who
have
Adam
Pyatt
MVPs.
Was the original quadruple-A guy. He hit for triple crown in the Texas League, which is, that's no joke.
No, triple crown, I don't care if you're doing it in the high school league.
As you're coming up through the minor leagues, if you throw up a triple crown at double-A, especially when Pyatt was at double-A, that was where you put your best prospects.
Sure.
Triple-A was kind of for veterans that if there's an injury with the big club, you plug them back in. Triple-A is being used more now as the final proving ground, but still a lot of people will tell you, you want to see the future all-stars of Major League Baseball, go watch Double-A baseball.
You know, that's interesting, and I think the A, boy, going back to the A's when they had the team in Sacramento, the River Cats, the original River Cats, they had a number of guys who were league MVPs but were 4A guys.
Right.
And it was a shame because you'd always think, oh, here comes the next one. He's going to make it to the big club, and you know, he was really good at AAA.
I remember, I'm blanking on the name, but somebody won, and I don't know if it was at AAA, but he had won Player of the Year 2 years in a row.
Yes.
And I had to do a phone interview, and I said, hey, man, congratulations. That's pretty sweet, 2 years in a row. And he goes, no, dude, that's awful. You do not want to be Player of the Year two years in a row. Why the hell were you not promoted after you won Player of the Year the first year? You're clearly not doing something they want to see. And he says, so I get why you would congratulate me, but to me, it's almost a negative.
That's I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. If I'm not mistaken, gosh darn it, I think it was, there was a big left-handed hitting first baseman who did it. I'm going to have to go back and figure that out. But you're right. You're absolutely right. You don't want to be that because if you're that good the first time, they're going to say, all right, we got to make room for this guy.
Exactly.
It's time to move it along. We're going to get a couple of more phone calls on this, and I eventually want to do actually, the last caller might have led us in the direction we want to go, because Major League Baseball and I thought it was the South Atlantic. It's the Atlantic League.
Right.
Used to be the Sally League, or is that a different league altogether? There was the South Atlantic League, and has it just become the Atlantic League now? Either way you do it, it's an independent league, and they're going to change some rules at the midway point of the season. So we're going to get into those.
You know what's interesting? Don't forget to ask me why I think they're doing it at midseason.
Oh, I'm going to write this down here. Why? Why at midseason?
Oh, the 925. I love you. I want to hold the 925 right now.
Really?
You know why?
Hold him or her.
Because they texted us just two words, and it's two words that I hold very near and dear to my heart, and I like to say it as frequently as possible, and now I have a chance to. Steve in Oakland has called in, parking in my garage. I'm going to let Steve say it for me. Steve, you are on the clock. What do I want to say right now? Go.
Barton, Derek Barton, Derek Barton, Derek Barton, Derek Barton, Derek Barton.
Yes. Very good. Derek Barton. I don't think he was that guy, but what do you have to say about Derek Barton, Steve? Do you think he was the guy?
He was a classic Billy Bean. I saw something in him that no one in the universe
And no, never no, and no, never stopped seeing it. He never stopped seeing it, right?
No, for years. You were on this for years. But he's not the only one. So there's a Piak. There's all these guys who really, gosh, they really were not major leaguers. But and yet the man is held up as some kind of a genius. It's a head scratcher for me, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard a lot of A's fans say that, and it's always, well, he's never won a playoff series. First of all, that's wrong. They went to the ALCS in 2006. But if you look at, here's my general philosophy on general managers and teams. Your responsibility is to put a compelling, entertaining product on the field year in, year out. You can't tell me the A's haven't been either compelling, competitive, or both every year that Billy Beane's been around.
Well, I think that
with the exception of the ugly end of the Bob Guerin era.
True, but let's go back. Because I'm an A's guy. I like the A's. I like what they're doing. But other than last year, which is a total surprise to most people, the three previous years weren't fun.
Agreed.
Right?
Yeah.
They weren't interesting.
But nobody stays at the top for, an uninterrupted... I mean, you look at Billy Beane's tenure. He started in, 98? Took over?
Wow.
99, Hudson makes his debut. The next year, Mulder, Zito. You've got Chavez, Giambi, Tejada, Terrence Long. You go get, Jermaine Dye. They were one of the best and most entertaining teams in baseball for
true.
A good long time.
Absolutely true.
They had two awful years at the end of the Bob Guerin, and then here comes Bob Melvin, and they shocked the world by making the playoffs. Then they make it two more years, yep. Then they miss. Now they're back to making the playoffs. I don't know. In terms of what I think a baseball's front office is, what their responsibility is to their fan base, I think the A's have delivered more than the Giants have over the past 20 years.
All right. Despite the fact the Giants have three World Series titles. Michael Urban, Jim Cozumel. We're going to swing over to baseball a little bit. That's coming in just a second. We got to clean up some phone calls, but I'm intrigued at what Major League Baseball is doing with the Atlantic League.
And why,
especially in the second half of the season. Don't go anywhere on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Urban and Cozumel.
Someone's putting words in my mouth, Coz. I don't like it.
There are worse things to put in your mouth.
Wow. Sure, Herbs. A team with a single playoff series victory had a better two decades run than a team with 10-plus series victories and three titles. That's not what I said. I didn't say that the A's have had a better run. I'm saying in terms of what a front office should be reasonably expected to deliver to its fan base, I would say that the A's have done a good job in that respect, as have the Giants. And the Giants have three titles, so they win.
John Balker,
quadruple A
guy.
Yeah, Ben Grieve, somebody says. Thank you for that, quadruple A guy. Yes, yes, yes. Travis Buck, great pull. I love Travis Buck. His hair was fantastic.
How's baseball going to be in the Bay Area this year?
Compelling.
You think so?
I do. Bruce Bochy's last ride makes it really interesting for me.
Oh, that's a good call. You know what? Why is that not playing bigger into my thoughts of the Giants? It should be. It should.
Why has the Larry Bear story absolutely disappeared?
I think it should.
Because we wanted it to.
Well, I don't. What else is there to talk about?
No, I hear you. I hear you.
I have nothing else to say about that. I didn't have much to say in the beginning, and I still think I said the most.
Right.
But I'm selfish that way.
We said the most.
Exactly.
You're doubting that.
No. That was a hard show.
It was.
That was a very hard show. But the biggest story should be Bruce Bochy and his last ride.
I agree.
Do you think it's his last ride or last ride as a Giant skipper?
Last ride as a Giant skipper. I think he'll manage again.
Where is, he's going into the Hall of Fame, right?
Yep.
There's no question.
No question.
That is a given. That's like pie is 3.14.
It's a lock.
Okay. But my question is, why isn't Brian Sabian thought of in the same terms?
I think he is, and I think he will be in the Hall of Fame someday.
I think he should be, but we don't. I think that there are going to be some tears shed the final home game of Bruce Bochy's Giants season.
No doubt. And Brian will be shedding some of those tears.
He'll be the guy shedding them.
I mean, look, inside baseball, Brian Sabian gets some credit for having built the Yankees into a powerhouse as a scout. And he obviously gets a lot of credit for building the Giants into a powerhouse as a GM. So I see him as being every bit the lock for the Hall of Fame that Bruce Bochy is.
I don't know how strong the contingent of scouts and executives are in the Baseball Hall of Fame. And if it's large, then they need to do a better job of promoting it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think scouts and executives who have built these franchises, I think they need to start to get more credit and claim for what they've done.
I agree. And by the way, Billy Beane's going to be a Hall of Famer too, whether you like it or not. He did revolutionize, and I throw air quotes around that, baseball. He did. He changed the game.
He also has a son who is a hell of a piano player.
Did not know that.
Yeah, exactly. Our kids happen to go to the same school. He was in the talent show. Wickedly awesome piano player.
Nice. Good for him.
That was his talent.
Oh.
How cool is that?
Silver spoon.
Huh? What was that?
Silver spoon. Come on.
That was a TV show.
You get raised. The percentage of kids who are taking piano lessons, I would say 90% of those kids come from upper middle or higher class. There's money in the family if you're taking piano lessons. That's all. You want to go to our guest now? I talked to him yesterday, and he's back with us today.
Go for it.
Pretty excited about it. Dieter Kurtenbach is a columnist for the San Jose Mercury News and the Bay Area News Group. Bang! Dieter, how you doing, man? Thanks for calling. Thanks for letting us call you again.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Though that lead-in is strange. I'm going to end up thinking about that more than maybe the Raiders or the Warriors here.
What in particular are you going to be thinking about?
You can buy, like, a digital piano, an electric piano, pretty cheap. I mean, I've known a lot of people who took piano lessons who weren't affluent.
Okay,
I don't disagree that Billy Beane has a lot of money.
I stand corrected, though. So let's get to something maybe I know a little bit about, and I fancy myself to know a little bit about the Niners and Raiders. And you can't look at this Antonio Brown deal and not think about the Niners at some point during your thought process, correct?
Yeah, that's fair. Though, man, it does feel like he's a better fit with the Raiders, though, right? Big personality, certainly a receiver who's going to get targeted a lot in a West Coast system as opposed to maybe more of Kyle Shanahan's egalitarian system. I always thought that the fit for the Raiders was better than that for the 49ers, especially when you take into account the money and kind of the state of those locker rooms and what the 49ers are trying to do culture-wise, which maybe they're being a little slow on that, but they still hold out high ideals as to how they want to build their team.
But, Dieter, when I think of Antonio Brown as a number one receiver, I think of Kyle Shanahan and what he was able to do with Julio Jones. You mean to tell me that having that type of skill player available to him with what we think the 49ers have as a quarterback wouldn't or couldn't be an equal match?
No. What I'm trying to say is that Antonio Brown is obviously an exceptional receiver. He's going to give the Raiders, I would presume, one or two more absolutely elite years at the minimum. But Kyle Shanahan's system doesn't force feed anybody. And Julio Jones certainly was never force-fed in Atlanta. He's just exceptional and got open all the time. And why wouldn't you throw it to Julio Jones? Perhaps the same can be said for Antonio Brown. But basically, the entire Shanahan offense is throw it to the open guy. You don't key in on a receiver as much. You need to make your full reads. You need to go across the board. And a lot of times, if you know, it's George Kittle, or we've seen, you know, Pierre Garçon when he was in for those three or four games, it seemed like he was kind of the guy who got open a lot. But Antonio Brown, with what went on in Pittsburgh, I just have a hard time seeing him sort of buying into that egalitarian system where he might not get 15 targets a game. They might not focus on him, and they might only use him as a decoy. It's just something that I had kind of at the back of my mind, as that might not work out because Shanahan's not going to cater the passing game to fit one guy, whereas Jon Gruden, we've seen it in the past. He will. He'll give a guy 140 receptions a year because that's his horse and he's going to ride it.
So, Dieter, we now know that the Raiders have traded Kelechi Osemele to the Jets, and what did they? They also sent a sixth-round pick, and they get a fifth-round pick back. Seems like they've been awfully busy since Mayock came and took over. However, Gruden, with the 10 years and $100 million, we're told that, you know, he's ultimately the decision-maker. Is that Mayock-Gruden dynamic, is it comparable to what's going on with the Niners with Shanahan and Lynch?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Yeah, it is in some ways. Now, obviously, the power dynamics that they play out publicly seem very different. Kyle does not want to be seen as the main decision-maker. Maybe Gruden doesn't want to be seen as the main decision-maker either, but the way that he handled his first year in Oakland kind of pulled back the curtain on that. It doesn't surprise me at all that the Raiders moved to Semele, considering that one was injured last year. He's up there, I guess he's 30 years old, but you know, injuries sort of accumulate for offensive linemen, and once you get one, it's kind of hard to get back to 100% health. And on top of that, he was just never really a fit for the system. We could have an argument about if it makes any sense to install a system that doesn't fit a guy like Kelechi Osemele, but alas, that's kind of where we're at, and the Raiders wanted to get off of that money. The question is now if they're going to spend that money on a guard, like a guy like Roger Saffold from the Rams, who I would argue is pretty much the only desirable guard on the free agent market this year. It certainly comes from a system that is similar to what the Raiders do. But when it comes to Mayock and Gruden, it doesn't surprise me that much that the Raiders have been more active, just because John Gruden doesn't have to moonlight as the team's GM, and you don't have this internal conflict that has to be navigated around anymore. Everybody's on the same page, at least it sure seems like it, and Mike Mayock can handle a lot of the duties of GM. He just has to slide stuff onto, you know, Gruden's desk for veto or you know, go ahead, and that changes a lot of the structure, I would imagine. I'm not sure if the Raiders could have swung a deal for Antonio Brown or kind of done this very swift in depth salary dump for Kelechi Osemele in short order this time last year. In fact, I don't think it would have been possible because of all of the red tape and nonsense that was going on with basically two different front offices that were managing the Raiders.
Dieter Kurtenbach from the Bay Area News Group, he joins us here on 95.7 The Game. Does this signal for the Raiders for this year? Because we thought this was a lame duck year for the Raiders. We thought that they were just going to go through here and really get things geared up for getting into their new stadium in Las Vegas. Does this up the timeline? And should we start to assume this is only the first of what are going to be multiple swings to make the Raiders relevant in their final Bay Area season?
Yeah, I don't know what the hell's going on, to be honest with you, because it doesn't jive at all with everything that we've learned about this team and what John Gruden wants to do since, I guess, he traded away Khalil Mack. I mean, he trades away Khalil Mack and trades away Amari Cooper, and if you view both of those trades from the lens of this team is building up so that when they're in Las Vegas, they have something young and exciting and under team control that they can build from, those trades worked out. They have a bunch of first-round picks over the next 2 years. They get a lot more spins at the roulette wheel. Those are positives, and they obviously didn't see those two classy veterans as guys that they wanted to build around, because why lock in mediocrity? And then they do this Antonio Brown thing. I totally understand, again, in a vacuum, why you would do it. Like, you gave up a third and a fifth for Antonio Brown, and nothing. And yes, you had to pay him fair market price, but, like, that wasn't crazy. Antonio Brown was an incredible player, but it just doesn't jive with the other two deals that you made three blockbuster trades now. Two of them make sense on their own, and one of them makes sense on their own, but when you put them all together, it doesn't make any sense. So I don't know if this is just trying to curry favor in the last year or two in Oakland, if this signals some sort of change or rebrand of John Gruden's goal, because now Mike Mayock's in charge. I don't know. I'm fascinated to hear how Gruden explains this one away, because, again, there's... with the way that the salary cap goes up every year in the NFL, goes up by eight figures every year, the way that the Raiders have been, you know, structured to spend money, they could have had all three, Mack, Cooper, and Brown. Obviously, you know, circumstances would have made it a little bit more difficult than in the hypothetical, but they could have had all three of those guys on the same team, and that would have been a team that we would have been talking about, this team. Like, does Antonio Brown even add two wins to this four-win Raiders team? They sucked on Saturday. They make this trade, they still suck today. So I don't
All right, so maybe that, maybe I shouldn't ask the next question, but I feel like I have to. We're going into year three of the Shanahan Lynch regime in San Francisco, and Coase here says maybe we should look at it more as year one and a half because of what happened last year with, you know, the two big boys on offense. Going into the season before any of the injuries, it was McKinnon's going to make a huge difference and Garoppolo, get a load of this guy in his first full season. Well, they didn't get either of those guys for most of the season. Does that make it, I don't know, this more like year two than actual year three? I mean, the bottom line is they got six-year deals, which was York's way of conceding things were so screwed up, it was going to take a good long while to get them right.
Yeah, I feel like it's somewhat of years. I think that's a fair point. And Shanahan and Lynch have laid the groundwork over the last 2 years to essentially establish that first year they had in Santa Clara as year zero, that they had to tear it down before they could even start rebuilding. That was going to take a year of itself. I don't necessarily buy into the notion that last year was a wash and that you can't hold it against the Niners because, yes, Evan Shane Garoppolo goes down and back goes the season. But if Jerick McKinnon is a cornerstone of what it is you're trying to do, you don't really have that strong of a foundation there. I like Jerick McKinnon a lot. I'm really excited to see what he brings to the 49ers. I think it was a strong sign, but you can't be that beholden to a running back for your own success. I can understand the quarterback part, but you know, teams are built on depth. Championship teams are built on depth. And the 49ers have had ample opportunity now to build up that depth. And they haven't drafted all that well at the top. I mean, you could look at Solomon Thomas as the best example of that. They haven't thrown around money in free agency, which there's virtue to that. At the same time, you can certainly see on the field that they could have used some extra reinforcement. And this is an offseason where they kind of have to put up here because if they do kind of the same thing they did last year, and they're looking for excuses like, oh, one player was out, therefore we couldn't have possibly been held to account for not making the playoffs this year, or not finishing 8-8 this year. If they do that again, I just don't think that it's going to play at all. And it shouldn't play because you've now had three off seasons to get this thing into a place where the team can contend. You have the quarterback. You got to start putting results on the field in 2019. And that doesn't mean that they need to go out and win the division and the Super Bowl or bust, but you have to make good on the patience of 49ers fans because they're not going to be patient forever.
Dieter Kurtenbach from the Bay Area News Group with us on 95.7 The Game. If we can, Dieter, let's just shift gears over to the Golden State Warriors. They play at home tonight against the Phoenix Suns. You know, now you're down to roughly 4 or 5 weeks left in the NBA regular season. Is now the time when Steve Kerr starts to really get an understanding or get his guys focused for the real season for them? They're going to be playing until late June in their perfect world. Is now maybe a time for us to start to watch things on the floor a little differently than we would have in February and January and in December?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we saw a little bit of that against the Nuggets on Friday. Steve Kerr goes to a shorter rotation, and we saw who he trusts. It's a little bit difficult to get a full calibration until Andrew Bogut is in the lineup and it looks like he's up to game speed. I don't know how long that's going to take, if it will ever happen at all, but I do think that Kerr needs to maybe lock down just as much as the players need to lock down. And my question on all of this is we've seen the Warriors turn on the Jets a couple of times already this season. We saw it happen on Friday night. How are they going to maintain that energy level, that focus level? They say that they can do it, that this is the time it's going to happen, that they're in the home stretch and it's go, go, go until June. But, man, I have to see it to believe it because they kind of promised that a few times now, and it really hasn't worked out. And this game against the Suns is an incredible Rorschach test for that because it looks like they're out there and playing with energy. Looks like they're focused. Then I might start taking that threat seriously. If they go out and lollygag, they'll still probably win. But, man, it's not about if they win or lose. It's about how they got to the end point. And I just need to see more championship habits out of this team. They're resting on their laurels a little bit. They know that they're significantly better than any other team in the Western Conference. There are questions about if they're better than any other team in the Eastern Conference, but those are questions that will be answered in June, perhaps. But, you know, the defense has been bad. I mean, straight up bad. I think it's in the bottom third of the NBA over the last 6-7 weeks. They turned it on against the Nuggets. You need to turn it on a consistent basis. I need to see what it looks like with DeMarcus Cousins against guys that are going to get around him. I need to see everybody engaged behind him, if they can make up for his liabilities in pick-and-roll defense, or if that's something that schematically needs to change with the lineups. I just need to see 6-7 games, the equivalent of the playoff series, in a row where the Warriors go out and decide we're going to do the hard part, the difficult part, and we're going to play defense every night in March. And if they can go out and do that, it will assuage all my fears. I will have no concerns whatsoever about the Golden State Warriors going into the playoffs, and it should probably be a cakewalk because I don't really fear any team in the Western Conference for the Warriors this year. They all have their deficiencies, and the Warriors, when they have it on, they're just head and shoulders better. So, but I just need to see it. You need to see it because the number one cause of death for dynasties is hubris. And if the Warriors think that they can just coast to another Western Conference championship and coast to another NBA championship, no, I don't fear these teams, but it's not as if the gap is so massive that they can't get caught. And a hubristic team, especially with the depth problems that they've shown this season, they could absolutely get caught.
Dieter, I'm so glad you mentioned the need to be buttoned up against the Suns, because before the show started, and understandably so, Coase just said, well, this is a layup for the Warriors. I mean, the Suns, they got second worst team and second worst record in the NBA. But it shouldn't be about the opponents anymore. And I understand if they're going to take on a team between now and the end of the regular season that they might face in the playoffs, yeah, that's, our ears are going to perk up a little bit more. But they spent so much time in the wake of the win over the Nuggets saying, okay, that's the effort, and you used the same two words, Dieter, that's the effort and that's the focus we need to play with, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. So yeah, tonight is, okay, you were motivated to do it against the Nuggets because they're barking down, you know, they're trying to run you down for that top seed in the West. Clearly the Suns are not a threat to anything the Warriors hold dear, but they kind of painted themselves into that corner after the game against the Nuggets, saying this is the way we need to play. And if you don't get that effort and focus against the Suns, then you're right back to where we all started talking about, why is this team so inconsistent? When are they going to put it together?
Yeah, especially when you look at the schedule for the rest of the week. I mean, they're in Houston and they're in Oklahoma City, so they're going to have two games there that they're going to want to be geared up for. If you string together four games where you are focused, energized, and you don't let down against the Suns, yeah, now I'm buying what you're selling, that you can turn it on when you want. You can flip the switch, whatever parlance you want to use, that you're ready to rumble and that, you know, you're locked in at this point. But if you let down during the Suns, then now we're back to that roller coaster, as you said, where it's, okay, you were up against Denver because you had something to prove to yourself, and maybe you wanted to stick it to Denver a little bit, and you lulled against the Suns, and regardless of the win or loss, it's about how they play. Perfectly put, it's about them, not about the opponent. And then, okay, now we got to gear back up for the Rockets, and then what happens if you get to Oklahoma City? You don't know what you're going to get in that situation. So it's about the consistency. It's about the diligence. Draymond put it best, as he usually does. He's more concerned about the focus than the energy, because the Warriors are not going to necessarily have that energy every night. But those two things are pretty well correlated. If that team is focused, if they're playing smart basketball, if they're doing what Kerr likes to do and hit singles instead of trying to hit home runs, usually there's a pretty good energy and flow to their game. And you just put them away early. That's the other thing, too. This team has had such poor starts, save for that Denver game. One game doesn't eliminate the fact that they've fallen behind by double digits in 12 of their prior 14.
And they coughed up the 19-point lead they built against the Nuggets.
Exactly. How about this? Here's a suggestion for the Golden State Warriors tonight, because obviously they care so deeply about what I said. But how about you put the Nuggets down by 20 and then keep them down by 20? The Suns down by 20 and keep them down by 20. That would be ideal. And then, you know, have Steph Curry and Kevin Durant and Boogie Cousins and Draymond Green and Klay Thompson take the fourth quarter off. That'd be a nice change for the Golden State Warriors, because they haven't been doing that as of recent.
Dieter, when you were a young kid, did everyone want you to be the great Mike Myers character, Dieter from Sprockets?
I don't know what you're talking about there, Coase.
Hilarious.
That doesn't bring back Battlestar at all.
Details, would you like to touch my monkey?
I would think that would be cool if you, like, for one of the Halloweens, if you went to that.
What's your address there?
Exactly. If you did that for a Halloween, don't you think that would be awesome?
There's a town in Germany called Dieter. It's called Kurtenbach, right?
Yeah.
And you have not been there yet? How can you not be the mayor of that town?
Yeah.
I think that they're equally immune to my BS over there. I did dress up as Dieter the Viking.
Yes.
Nice.
Yes.
Would you like to touch my monkey?
Yeah, it was aggressive, especially for like Saturday Night Live has like been like a core tenet of my life. I think I've seen every single episode. Mike Myers is like a golden
classics.
So all of that stuff was just like right in my wheelhouse. It might have been too advanced of a joke, though, for like a 12-year-old.
That's cool, though.
This is Dieter from Sprocket. There's a nuance to that. It might have been picked up. I guess.
That is so sweet.
That now, later on, I go, that might not have been the best call.
As long as I get the opportunity to say, would you like to touch my monkey?
Yeah, exactly. That's all you want. That's all you want.
Dieter, thanks for your time, man. You've been generous with it this weekend. We appreciate it.
Yeah, you're awesome.
It's my pleasure, guys.
Thanks, man. We'll do it again. Dieter Kurtenbach. There's a Kurtenbach, Germany.
Yeah.
And he's not been there.
He said, I learned this by listening to Rick Tittle with Dieter last week.
That's like a 400-level course.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I would have either dropped that class or not signed up for
pass, it. Pass-fail. I'm going pass-fail.
Two very
fail.
Bright guys swapping paint, basically. But yeah, Rick is the one who got it out of him. Of course, Rick knew there was a town in Germany called, you know, Kurtenbach. And so he asked Dieter, had he been there? And I think Dieter probably went out and bought Lonely Planet, Germany, and he's probably planning his trip to his namesake as we speak.
That's what happens when you listen to 95.7 The Game.
See?
You get that kind of fun
stuff. We are givers.
We've got some areas we can go to. I still have some interesting stuff on the Raiders moves.
We got the
baseball stuff.
Atlantic League baseball stuff, and we also have some Boogie, Draymond, KD stuff.
God.
And just a wet your whistle. What do En Vogue, Sir Mix-a-Lot, Dougie Fresh, Rob Bass, and the Funky Bunch, without Marky Mark, have in common?
Next on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Urban and Cozumel.
That is really epic. Were you a fan of punk music?
Sex Pistols I got into, yeah. I went through a phase.
There's a documentary starts tomorrow on Epics.
Uh-huh.
Punk music is a four-parter.
Is Epics a subscription thing?
I got to see if I have it. I have Xfinity at home. I got to see if I have it.
Yeah, me too.
Because I'd like to see it starts tomorrow night, so I want to go see that.
There's a great series on Netflix. It's called Rapture. It's like eight different documentaries about eight different
Blondie?
Rap artists.
Oh, and I thought it was about Blondie.
No, and I love it because last night I watched G-Eazy, who is a local guy, East Bay product. Logic, who is an interesting dude to me, mixed race guy who came up from like the worst of circumstances. But it's a Netflix original series, and they do good work, man. Netflix is... They're going to
be around for a while?
Well, yeah, I think they're going to make it. I'm the scout that said about Barry Bonds in year three of his career. Yeah, I think this guy's going to stick.
If you like Bay Area rap, Northern California rap,
mm-hmm.
ask Butcher Boy to break down his top five Oakland or Bay Area rappers.
I've heard it.
It's phenomenal.
Kolsky's is better.
No.
Yes. Guru's is worse because Guru has Drake in his top five.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.